Some years it's high, some years it's low. If you go to any country in the tropics, you will find the same thing. We will not get the same climate every year or the weather. But if you travel northern to the higher latitudes, it's more stable. So year to year change is not so high. But in the tropics, the variability is very high. Roughly, the rainfall could be one-third higher than the mean or one-third lower than the mean value in every 4 years. So if you take 4 to 5 year period, you can expect rather dry year and rather wet year. So when we design the agriculture systems, we have to decide on what is the expectancy of rainfall. In the dry zone, it is about 800 millimeters. As I told you, the evaporation here is about 5 to 7 millimeters. It could be as much as 2,000 millimeters. So the evaporation demand is much higher than the total rainfall. So this means that's why the rainfall alone is not enough and the area is rather dry. There's paddy, which is supported by irrigation, about 13%, which covers about 13% of the land, and much of it comes under this ancient irrigation systems. And in the ancient irrigation systems also, we divide them into small and large. The large means the large reservoirs, but also we call some are very small reservoirs. Small reservoirs which are managed by communities or by the small local, maybe more than village, but not at a very big scale. So the definition is that they can provide water to an area roughly less than 80 hectares. So if the reservoir is big, if you can irrigate much bigger area, it doesn't come under small reservoirs. In these old small reservoirs, there are about 20,000 which have been already accounted for. But some say it is more than 20,000 because a lot of those small reservoirs have been abandoned. Out of these 20,000, about 15,000 have been studied somewhat or being recorded, and currently about 7,500, roughly half, are still in operation. But most have been replaced with new modern irrigation systems, so that's why not all of them are working. And about the large reservoirs, we have about 160, and recently constructed ones are only about 12. So most of the others are large ones are made in the very old times. When I say very old times, which time? They have been built 5th century BC. So this is about 25,000 years old to about 20th century. That means they were built about during a period of about 1,700 years. So the main features is that some of them are still functioning, that means they are very sustainable, and they have evolved over a long period of time, almost 17,000 years. And we know that these systems declined in the 12th century, and still there is no very clear idea why they have declined, why they have gone being unused. Some people originally thought it was maybe because of malaria, because when there was war between southern India and Sri Lanka, they normally cut off the irrigation channels, which flood the land, which grows mosquitoes. But then people said, no, that is not the reason. It has become very, very complex, the system, and there are some very specialized people who are managing these systems. And during the war, these people who managed the systems actually were killed in the fighting mostly, so they could not really manage. So still there's some discussion going on about why it declined. But also it could be that people started to migrate to the more rainy area and found that they could manage the water there for agriculture much easily. This is one example of a tank which was built 227 AD. So it is now functioning almost 1,800 years. The volume of water it is holding is about 135 million cubic meters. The circumference of this The reservoir is about 32 kilometers. So this is man-made bank, which is about 32 kilometers, and it is providing irrigation even now, continuously. And so there are many such large reservoirs, but then there are very small reservoirs. Some of the main features is that while they have been there for a long period, one is because they were systems which have been designed and operated in an integrated manner. For example, if you think now we have departments for irrigation, agriculture, forestry, wildlife, animal husbandry, so many different institutions. Sometimes they do not work together. But in these systems, they were all under one particular system. And we can find the reservoirs have names of trees, vegetation, because they can be considered this as an integrated part. The forest, the trees, and the reservoirs were designed together so that they could make sure that there's sufficient water. And sometimes people did not use water for irrigation in the dry period. They used water for amenity, for cultural works. So irrigation was not the main purpose in some cases. So the water was not only for irrigation but also for use, but also they considered cultural activities and the water for them also as very important. So in a sense they have been managed in a very integrated way. So let me show you some pictures of these reservoirs. They're also quite beautiful. They blend very nicely with the natural environment, and because this area is dry, it gives very good cool breeze when we visit these irrigation systems. This is the bund of that irrigation, the reservoir I showed you, which has 32 kilometers in length, and these were constructed by taking earth and building it. So we have the reservoir on this side, we have the paddy fields on this side, and the water goes from the reservoirs to the paddy fields. So this is on the other side, the paddy field. And these paddy fields has also patches of forests, and they are not only the paddy, they have different vegetation together with paddy fields. Now, who made these systems? These were developed mainly under the patronage of the kings, but the kings did not have too much power in the olden Sri Lanka. The reservoirs was built and operated, small ones were built and operated by villagers. And I read a poem about this reservoir. The king has gone to the village chief and asked him to give the reservoir to the king. And he asked two people to give two reservoirs, so he connected them to make a big one. So the king did not have the power to go and take it over directly. And this kind of systems made a very decentralized social system in the country. And also, you know that in ancient times there are different castes, different social strata. In Sri Lanka, the highest social level is a farmer. And it's very strange because more than 50% of the people are in the highest social category. So the kings and the chiefs of the Buddhist clergy have to come from the farming class. So they had some elements within this farming class. So it's also an interesting subject to study about how the water management plays society. I think there's a very interesting book, whether society arranged water or whether water arranged society. So there's a thesis. It says water utilization and distribution actually decides how society is structured. And some say that the way society is structured decides how the water is used. So there's a very strong link between how we manage water and how the society is organized. So historically, we call the civilization the hydraulic civilization. These were abandoned, but then under the British rule of the Sri Lanka, one survey, General Grohier, he himself identified about 11,000 of these tanks in the north central part. And these were constructed in the period of the ancient kingdom in Sri Lanka, which is in Anuradhapura, which was followed by the 12th century moving to another place very nearby called Kolonnadu. There's one king saying attributed to him is, let not a single drop of water go waste into the sea without drinking the world. So he said, we must make use of all the water the rainfall brings in. And this saying is carved in the stone in one of his reservoirs. The reservoir here you see is called a sea. The Sinhala is named Samudra, means sea, because it is, you can't see the other side of that, it's very big. And also you can see the waves coming in from the winds. So one thing is this big reservoirs. The another one, very important one, is the canals. They were able to build canals which could transport water over long distance. Now this particular one, which was built in 4th century, here, has a very, very small gradient. It has about 1 point, it's about 1 inch to 1 mile, about 6 centimeters for 1.5 kilometers. So it's almost standstill. And it's 86 kilometers long. It's very long and very mild gradient. And also when we look at the picture, we cannot say it's artificial construction. It looks very natural. So one of these was the irrigation systems where the water was conveyed from very long distance. Second one is what you see down, which is a valve pit, which is a very important discovery or the invention which made it possible to build large reservoirs. In these Sluice gates were actually invented in 3rd BCE. What you see here is on the top, you see a valve going in. So the water pours into that and then go down and then go through the sluice. Before this was invented, it was not possible to make very large reservoirs. Before, what they had was only the water taken from the bottom of the reservoir. So when you try to increase the size, the vibration is too high and it would destroy the bund. And by having this kind of sluice gate, you can drop the water and reduce the energy of the water, so the water goes out very, very mildly. And there was a British engineer, Sir Henry Parker, who studied in 1800. This says they were the first inventors of the valve pit, which was actually came into being used in Europe much, much later. So this invention was made it possible to build very, very large reservoirs. So there are these canals, which are very milestone, very long, to transport water, and then there are these reservoirs. And the interesting thing about these systems is that almost everything is interconnected. I think it's difficult for you to see from there, but some of the reservoirs here is built in 3rd century. Some of them built in 2nd century BC. So 300-400 years gap is in between these different reservoirs. But they were built and connected to each other. So historically they were connected, but then everything was connected. So they finally resulted in a very complex network of reservoirs. And these big reservoirs were also connected to the small tank reservoirs. As I told you, one of the most important aspects is the decentralized independent management of these reservoirs. They were completely managed by communities at village level. And these village level systems, which you can see on the right side, form cascades. There are two types of reservoirs in these cascades. One is the main cascade, which is water releases from one reservoir to another and to another. And there are others which are independent but released to the reservoir. And this finally, this output is connected to the large reservoirs. And from the large reservoirs also they are fed into the small reservoirs. So all these more than 30,000 of these reservoirs are in one way or the other connected to each other, and they also are connected to the big reservoirs. At the village level, they were managed by the community. They had appointed the person who would decide on the water management issues. And the so many of these cascades have been studied, but I think we will skip that. This is the basic layout of a village tank. So we have a forest which is preserved to provide the inflow to the reservoirs. And then you have reservoirs there. And then there's a bund, which is at the village level, so mostly they keep the water. And then there's paddy fields. Village is somewhere here. And then we have some place for the for animals, water. And these are the irrigated paddy. And they were distributed in a way that depending on the amount of rainfall, different parts of this system can be irrigated. And they have also designed a way that different families can own lands in high ground and low ground. So when there's not enough water, the high ground are abandoned, only the low field is used. But when there's more water, then everything is irrigated. And usually every village has these three components. One is the tank, and the one is the religious monument. You saw some pictures of these Buddhist structures, and then the rice field. Now, there have been discussion about how these things have come into being, and this also has an important implication in the current water resources planning in the country. The first theory came from that British survey I mentioned earlier. He said it evolved in four stages. First stage was there was a rainwater tanks, the small tanks. Second one was that they had bunds in the tank or the dams, and then they regulated water. And the third stage, he said, the small tanks were inundated to make big tanks, the large reservoirs. So many, many small reservoirs made together into the big reservoirs. And the fourth stage was this excess water was transported between different reservoirs. So this is one idea, how these systems were evolved. Is it important? In a sense, it's important because this four-stage theory assumed that the evolution is from a small single tanks to large big tanks. And this has also affected the modern water resources development to some extent. People would argue that big, large systems are more efficient. It is the more logical outcome, and we should not think about the small systems. So in fact, in the modern times, when the new irrigation systems were developed, most of the small irrigation tanks were actually destroyed. They said this is, we should not think of them anymore because these are not very efficient and not, we should not consider. Because the idea was that large systems are much more efficient, they reduce losses, they can utilize. But there's also an alternative view which says maybe that is not the correct way this has happened. Maybe some say the canals were there first. That first the feeder canals were built and then the reservoirs. So as you saw, the canals are very mild, which we call contour canals, because they go along the contours. And then, and these canals are taken from rivers which had water throughout the year. And then they were used to irrigate paddy fields. And when there's excess, they were stored in storage tanks. So their idea is that maybe the tanks came later. And independent communities sort of developed around those tanks and led to the community-based maintenance. And then they use these experiences to develop different methods for control of salinity and how to utilize the bed materials and so on. And then in this idea, the small tanks were connected to form cascades within the mesocatchments, and the cascades were interconnected from large systems, sometimes transversing transfers, and when there's excess water, they build new reservoirs. And this has led to this system of interconnected small and large reservoirs. Independent of reservoirs, one of the biggest challenges we have always is how to connect the macro and micro. Micro level things which affect us at the daily scale, and the outcomes at the macro level which affects national or global scale, are very difficult to manage. Sometimes the decisions we have to take at the macro level, it's difficult to implement them at the micro level. Sometimes we create problems at the micro level which manifest at the macro level. So this, in another sense, these systems can be used to identify these linkages between the micro and macro. And there is some evidence that this may have been the case. There have been some large floods in 1957 from extraordinary rainfalls, which breached many of these old tank irrigation systems. And people could not find small tanks inside the big tanks. Because if that evolution theory is correct, we should be able to find small reservoirs inside big reservoirs. But they were not there. And secondly, people also realize some big reservoirs were built not along rivers which flow throughout the year, but along canals which are transporting water. So this may be that there's this other view. And this is one thing we would like to actually investigate, because this will have a linkage between how the technology evolves with the management systems. And we would like to know what are the social systems we need to manage this kind of structures, and also what actually guide the co-evolution of management and actual development. Now then, we had the modern irrigation systems. One of the most noted one is what we call the Mahavali irrigation system. Mahavali is the biggest river in the country, which flows from the central part to the northwest. Northeastern province, and there had been a plan to actually tap the water, because it brings the abandoned water from the central hills to the dry zone. And if we can transfer the water to the dry zone, the water requirements could be met. So originally there was a plan to build what we call the Mahavali Development Project over a 30-year period. But in 1977, the government decided to shrink the 30-year program to only 6 years. So a very big accelerated Mahavali research project program was developed. And it creates huge amount of jobs, it created huge amount of reservoirs, and 10 reservoirs which can store more than 2,000 million cubic meters were built. And the canals and branch canals length was more than 350 kilometers. And more than 460,000 hectares were developed.